You're listening to a download from the outdoorsstation.co.uk.
Number 299.
Hello everybody and welcome to the first in a series of interviews and podcasts from this year's 2010 outdoor show at Friedrichshafen, right on the banks of Lake Constance, and which forms the border between Switzerland and Germany. Well, we're here once again, and the weather is certainly shining on our on us. It's registered to be about 35, 37 degrees, so we're pretty sweltering as we go around these 14-odd huge halls containing the best that the outdoor industry can offer the European market, and there certainly is plenty to see. It usually takes about a day to go through half the halls and then another day on the second half, and then we dash between the rest. But it's a massive complex, and certainly it's nice to be in a gloriously sunny day, but sadly the people on the stands aren't air-conditioned, so they're beginning to fade by the afternoon. Anyway, what have we got for you? Well, we saw Roman, our international correspondent here, who got very, very excited on hearing that Terra Nova had produced a new Cuban fibre tent. So he's gone beetling off to the Terra Nova stand. And I'm shortly heading over to Innovate, where they are introducing a couple of new products, something very, very exciting. Again, they've won awards for a second skin, an Evo skin for the feet, and a new range of footwear there as well. And, well, we'll just see how we carry on for the rest of the day and who we bump into. But we'll bring you as much as we can as it all develops. Anyway, let's see what Roman is getting up to over with Terra Nova.
So I'm sitting here together with Andy Utting from Terra Nova, and they did it once again, like in the previous years. They came back with a gold award for their new tent. It's the Laser Ultra One tent. It's a one-person shelter. And that one-person shelter weighs roughly 560 gram, including the packs and the main pole. Construction is more or less identical with the already existing Laser Photon 1, with the difference that obviously the fly sheet is out of a different material, which is much lighter weight. So Andy, tell us a little bit about the new fabric.
Okay, we're using a very lightweight fabric that weighs significantly less than the fabrics in the Laser Photon. We're using that on the ground sheet and on the fly sheet. To really push the boundaries on weight. Our target weight was 500 grams, and you can use this tent at 500 grams on the trail if you wish, or a fully packed weight at 560 grams, which includes the bags, the pegs, the sticks, everything that you get in the package. Yeah.
And also, as I see here, there's also kind of a minimal version if you leave the inner at home and only use the ground sheet and the outer, you come down to 385 grams, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. If you're the sort of person that likes to saw his toothbrush in half, you know, to save weight, then equally there's an option with the Laser Ultra and some of the other tents that we do to go fast pack, which we mean you buy a ground sheet that fits the tent, you leave your inner at home and you take the poles and the fly sheet with you, and you can save weight considerably. So, for example, a Laser Ultra 1 would come down from 500 grams to 385 grams, which is next to nothing, yeah.
So, obviously, that Ultra fabric is something which is kind of new in your range. You also used that previously for a backpack, but we will come to that one later. So, what are the specifics of that material? What are the challenges in terms of construction design in comparison to, let's say, kind of a silk nylon?
Okay. Well, the fabric's actually very good compared with a silk nylon. It still has a very, very high hydrostatic head at 3 meters and very good tear and tensile strengths. But when you sew it, you have to be careful how you sew it in order that the seams are strong enough to use, yeah?
So, obviously, that material is also kind of translucent, which probably people like or don't like. So what do you see as kind of the target customer for that tent?
Well, it's a customer who wants the lightest product available, really. We are selling it really for adventure racing and where weight is it needs to be optimized. But equally, people who know how to look after their products, who are used to very lightweight product and want the best available, will buy this tent.
So obviously with such a material that probably needs a little bit more care to be used according to the best effect. There might be potentially at least some problems with people misusing it and running into warranty issues and those kind of things. So what is your opinion about that?
Well, we're not afraid of the warranty issues. Obviously, we're Terranova, so we back the product with good warranty, repairs from the UK, etc., etc. But I would make the analogy with bicycles, really. I mean, you can buy a very good bike for £800, or you buy a super carbon lightweight bike at £4,500. So you need to look after this bike, yeah? And it's the same with the Laser Ultra, yeah?
So and from your experience, let's say your targeted customers plus your salespersons down on the field, they're well educated enough so they know how to use that system properly without damaging it, etc.
Yeah, this needs a good retailer to sell it to a customer and make sure that customer is the right customer for that product. We have other products that are very, very lightweight for more general use. And we would encourage that sort of use. But equally, the price is very difficult for a lot of people. I mean, it's retailing at £650 in the UK compared with the Laser Competition at about £300. So, they have to pay a price for the very lightest product, yeah.
So £650, you said, and when do you think will that tent be available for end customers?
It should be available around January, February time.
Next item actually I want to talk about is a little backpack weighing only 100 grams, which is, again, out of the same material than what you used in your new tent. Obviously also made and addressed to ultralight hikers. It has a capacity, what is the capacity actually?
Of
20 liters, yeah. Thanks for that. Once again, same construction and design ideas behind that back, which also guided you towards your new tent?
Yeah, we're looking to be lightest in class, and there are other similar products available in the US, and we need to bring this technology to the UK. We encourage people who are doing venture racing, etc., to use this product. Yeah.
Okay. So... obviously, it's not the first year you're selling that the type of backpack. So, what are your experiences so far in terms of, sold numbers and issues with damaged products, etc.
So far, we've not had any damaged products back, but it's only really been in the marketplace maybe 6 months. Yeah.
Right.
So we launched it last winter at ISPO, but we're very encouraged really by the sales. Yeah. But again, it's a very niche product. Yeah.
Price point for that product, which is obviously already available?
The Laser Ultra 20 retails at £120.
Great. Thanks a lot, Andy, and I wish you all the success for 2011 with your just won Gold Award and the new TED.
Yeah, we're very pleased with that, naturally. Thank you very much.
Any time, any place, anywhere.
This is the Outdoor Station. A million listeners worldwide can't be wrong.
It's all about the great outdoors.
This is the Evo skin, which is our latest launch product, and this is actually a second skin for the foot. There's a huge groundswell out in the marketplace with regards to barefoot and more minimalist running and walking, And the reason for this is so that people can strengthen and develop their feet and walk or run in a natural position. So this is no differential between your heel and forefoot. This is a second skin, so it's just a silicon molded stretchable material that we've developed that gives you that extra protection on your foot, because we've all got much softer feet because we're not used to walking barefoot. The advantage of using this product is that you get a very good proprioceptive feel underneath your feet, and you can feel the different textures. So if you're walking on grass, soft, you know, rounded stones, sand, you can still be in tune with that terrain, but it takes the sharpness off of it, which a lot of us feel because we're not used to wearing barefoot. The big advantage of using this product is that it gives you a full range of foot motion. Okay, so if you build your mileage, and what we're asking people to do is start with this and just build up their mileage. So as an example, one of our testers who works within the company, when I first showed him the prototypes, he was very skeptical about it. He used to be a very big fell runner and run to a high level, but he's suffering with injuries that he was struggling to overcome. He then started running with the product, and the first run he did 50 meters. Okay, that's all he could do. He's now up to running 3 to 4 miles every time on the product, and he runs in it 3 to 4 times a week. He's no longer having any injury problems, and he's a big fan of the product. Okay, so it's totally converted based on actually going through the experience of using it. And what we're trying to encourage people to do is just use that full range of motion, strengthen their feet. Okay, we're not saying use this for everything. Okay, let's use it as a training tool to develop your feet. Okay, and the more you can wear it, okay, and use your feet in a barefoot environment, okay, the stronger you'll develop your feet. And if we look back in history, our ancestors, hundreds of years ago, used to wear barefoot. They used to walk on terrain that wasn't man-made, so they were walking in grass, sand, stones, on bark. This helped to stimulate the nerve endings in the bottom of the feet. There's a lot of different nerve endings, okay? And over the years, we've developed shoes, we've put lots of cushioning and everything into it, and as we've done that, we've distanced ourselves from being in tune with the terrain that we're in. So we no longer feel those textures and variation, and that's not ideal for the foot. So actually, if you can bring some of those elements back into it, you will have other health benefits, because you'll be stimulating those nerve ends, and that then transfers into the rest of the body, and there should be health benefits from that. So, you know, there's a whole groundswell out of there. You know, the Born to Run book has helped that. That's had huge exposure. It's been a huge success. And you look at what's come out of that, there's a lot more awareness now. And people are reflecting on it and saying, well, actually, do we need all this cushioning? Do we need all this support? Now, Innovate as a brand, since we launched the brand, this has always been our philosophy.
Absolutely,
yeah. So we've always been about natural running, okay? We supply various types of soles, okay, depending on what type of grip and terrain that you're running on and what the weather conditions are like, whether it's wet or dry. And then we also have a cushioning system. Now, our cushioning system is graded from a zero arrow, which means no differential, which this Evo skin is. Okay, we go to a one arrow, which has a 3 millimeter differential heel to forefoot with minimal cushioning. Okay, so that is the next step up, where you still get an element of underfoot cushioning, okay, but allows you to be in tune with the terrain. Then we go up from there to a two arrow, which has a 6 millimeter differential, which again gives you that next step up. And then from there you go to a 3 arrow, which is a 9 millimeter differential, and a 4 arrow is 12 millimeter. So the differential increments are 3 millimeters each time. And even at our most cushioned shoe, which is the 4 arrow, it's 12 millimeters, which is actually on the low end of differential against other brands. Okay, this is the norm in the industry. So what we're saying to people is they must transition and go to a 4 arrow or a 3 arrow, develop their feet, because they will feel a difference from doing that, and build up their mileage, and then go on to maybe a 2 or 1 arrow. And this must be done over a period of time. People mustn't rush into it. And this is the concern with people just going from very cushioned shoes to a very minimalistic shoe. We're not recommending they do that quickly. It's got to be a gradual process, okay, so that you develop your feet and you get accustomed to actually having a lower differential, and this will be better for you. So it's a slow transition, and that way is you're at less risk of injuring yourself.
Certainly, we, as you know, we're fans of Innovate, and we've actually made a lot of the journey ourselves from in the hiking arena, going from heavier boots to lighter boots to approach shoes, and some of your range in particular, which suit my feet perfectly. And everything you've just said, I can totally agree with, because we've experienced it, Rose, as well. And certainly, as you mentioned, the book, the Born to Run book, is opening people's eyes to the options and starting to ask questions. Particularly when you're at a trade fair like this, and you just see how many layers of protection that we've taken on over the years. Now we're stripping them away again and starting to realise the benefits of actually being in touch with the environment in a much greater way, which is very, very pleasing to see this. Now, what sort of feedback have you had and interest from sort of the different nationalities in Europe to this? Because this has obviously taken prominence in the show, and it's everywhere to see on the posters and so on. So I'm fascinated to know how people have related to it.
Well, it's been mixed depending on the countries. And what we've found is countries where barefoot is perhaps more popular. So if you look at Australasia, okay, they tend to use barefoot more often there, so they can relate to this product a lot easier, but you're going to have the protection. So say someone that's going into the sea, but they're cautious about getting their feet cut on sharp shells or standing on a jellyfish or something like that, this is an ideal product for them. And that's why it's got the additional strap. If you're doing a high aerobic sport, you can put the strap on that gives you additional protection and holds the Evo skin better on your foot. Mm. Or if you're diving or swimming into the water, okay, it just holds it better. So that's why we've done that. And then the same in Europe. So there's certain countries in Europe, so like the Spanish community, they actually prefer lower profile shoes because they like to be in tune with their terrain. Same with the UK. They actually like lower profile shoes, and that's why Innovate's been very successful in the UK, is because we're giving that underfoot feel and we're offering the range of soles for the different conditions. The Evo skin doesn't have an aggressive sole at all. This is a smooth profile. This is for someone that's perhaps just wanting to walk around and develop their feet, maybe doing a bit of running and building up their mileage.
So it's a training accessory, right?
That's correct. It's also useful for slacklining because you're in tune with the terrain. So most people do slacklining, will do it barefoot, whereas this gives you extra protection. Also helps with slip, because as soon as your feet get sweaty, you can slip. So we've already had some high-profile slackliners using this product.
Cool.
Okay. Aerobics, if you're doing... not aerobics, yoga. So if you're doing yoga, if you're doing acrobatic yoga, you've got someone that you're doing the acrobatics with. As soon as you start to sweat on your feet, that's slippery and dangerous. So acrobatic yoga, instructors have been using this product and liking it. So they've been through the whole full test cycle with it. It's also handy because you don't, good because you don't slip on the yoga mat.
Right, yeah.
Okay, which you can do if your feet get a little bit sweaty. So there's a lot of advantages there. And we've had... It's been different from different countries, but what people are really opening their eyes now to the more minimal footwear, and there's this big groundswell on barefoot. Mm. And we're a brand that's have said this since we launched seven
Absolutely.
Years ago. So
yeah.
All we're doing now is offering more products and more minimal products to cater for this.
With the actual product itself, you've obviously tested the durability of the material that you've used. What sort of lifespan do you expect from it?
Well, on the testing that we've done to date, the most mileage we've done on any single pair is about 150 miles, okay? And it hadn't worn through. There is a trade-off because it needs to be soft enough that you get good grip, okay? And soft enough that you get that nice flexibility underneath the foot that gives you that barefoot feel. We're going to be increasing the durability slightly on the material and the thickness that will take it up, and we reckon you could do about 200 miles on it.
When is that going to actually be available in the retailers?
These are going to be available for spring, summer, so we're talking about February, March in retail 2011.
And do we have a sort of a borderline price at the moment?
UK price is going to be around about £40-45.
And what about this other product as well? This is obviously also receiving great awareness and attention at the show.
It's good. This is actually the Bear Grip 200, and we're really pleased with this product. It's got a very aggressive sole, hence the name Bear Grip. and we actually won the Gold Industry Award for this product at this Frederikshavn Outdoor Show, which is, you know, great for the brand, and we've had a lot of exposure and a lot of interest in the product. Just to give you an idea, apparently there were about 450 entries into the awards, the industry awards. Wow. And from that it's shortlisted, and then there's gold in each of the categories, and it's not many categories, so we're really proud to receive a gold award for this product.
Congratulations.
It's very minimal, this product, so you're talking about a cleated outsole, which we do very well on other products, so we've got a lot of experience in this. It's got the bone structure of the foot, which is mirrored on the shape and dimensions of the foot, okay? That allows the product to just really work in harmony with the foot and just give you this extra protection and grip. And the only cushioning that you get in this product is from the footbed, so there's no midsole at all. So it's our zero arrow, and there's no differential. So your foot is in its natural position. There's no differential heel to forefoot.
And so what's the target market for this? Is this it fell runners? Is this elite runners or endurance runners who want that grip with that sort of terrain? Or is there another marketplace this specific product's looking at?
Target market for this is an elite runner or someone that wants to use it for short, fast races in dampish terrain. So it's ideal for the UK type conditions. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's got an aggressive outsole, so it's going to give you good grip in mud and grass. Okay, it's really, you're in tune with the terrain, so you'll be feeling all of it. But what elite runners will like about this product is because there's no cushioning in it, or very little cushioning, it's not going to sap energy, so they get maximum efficiency when you're running. Okay, and that's what they're going to like about it. So it's for short, fast, off-road races, whether it's fell or cross-country. This is the ideal sort of product. There'll also be people out there that are doing cross-country, may not want a spike. There's a lot of cross-country routes that go on the road for certain sections of it. This is the ideal product because you can run on the road for that little section. You haven't got to worry about running in spikes. And then you've got this, and you can use that for the off-road cross-country terrain. And it's a crossover product that you can also use for a bit of fell running if you want to do that.
Well, I've certainly used the mud claw when we do occasionally do our adventure races, and I feel like I'm Spider-Man with that, because whatever I put my foot on, it sticks to, which is a wonderful feeling of confidence. Price point and availability?
So price point on that is £85, okay, and the availability, again, like the EvoSkin, will be February, March 2011 for spring summer launch, and in time for the fell running cross country season. The upper on it is very lightweight, it's very breathable. It's got our Metacradle fastening system on the lace and the TPU. It's very lightweight, it only weighs 200 grams for an average size 8 shoe. Very flexible, very responsive under the foot, and it's a great looking product. So we're looking forward to getting it into the market.
Well, Terra Nova and Innovate, they're both with probably the most talked about products that we've seen at the show. We can certainly hear various people talking about them as we walk around the different halls and also in the press room, which is quite interesting. So I'm sure they'll get plenty of coverage over the forthcoming months as the material is released after July 2010 and everybody gets back from the show. There is one thing about the Frederikshavn event. You do tend to obviously bump into familiar strangers and familiar friends, people you know from the past, as it were, or you met through the industry, which is quite interesting. One of which perhaps is Claire Maxted. Claire, who I think freelances for Trail Magazine, but is now is the editor of Trail Running Magazine, I notice is training for the all-terrain competition, which is happening later on at the showground. In the centre of the showground, there's a big open-air arena, and there's probably about a 100-metre track that they've created in a circuit, in a loop, with some very, very steep banks in it. And they're having a sort of an all-terrain race where sponsored people will people like Innovate and so on are running up and down, showing the prowess with their equipment and their footwear, and also testing each other. There's some free runners are doing an incredible demonstration of what free runners can do, and I just wish I was 20 years younger, because it looks like great fun. And bless her, Claire is giving it her best shot. So this evening, when we're all standing around drinking cold beer, she'll be out there running around in the sunshine, and fair play to her for doing that. Another familiar face, or certainly a voice in my case, is Ronnie Dodd. Ronnie is works for TGO Magazine on the sales side, on the advertising side, and I've spoken to him many a time on the phone. And it just so happens that Rose was talking to him and discovered that he's got a passion for wild swimming. And it's not a recent thing that's following the sort of the current trend, but actually something that he's been doing for some time. So amongst all the melee, it's been good to stop for a few moments and have a word with him about something completely different, as it were, and find out his interest in wild swimming and if it tempts us to dive into a loch.
It started initially from being in the swimming pool more than anything else, being fed up with busy lanes, being fed up with chlorinated water, and deciding to just get out there, get into the outdoors. I'm out there on the hill on a regular basis, so having walked past numerous different lochs and tarns, I thought I would try it that way.
So how long ago did you actually start doing it, Isabel?
I started taking it seriously maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. And now, as you'll hear, it's now developed into not quite obsessive, but a good passion of mine. I really enjoy it, a good way of stress relieving and obviously keeping the fitness up as well.
So 4 or 5 years ago, that's really before the sort of current trend, because it's now you sort of flip open any country magazine, there seems to be some sort of mention about wild swimming.
Which is good. It's all healthy that that's taking place. But yeah, no, it was, as I say, 4 or 5 years ago when I actually started up. It was just the love for being in the outdoors that encouraged me to do it, instead of, as I say, being in chlorinated water.
So are you a strong swimmer, or were you a strong swimmer before you started doing this?
Swam a lot when I was a kid. My mum and dad took me to swimming lessons when I was younger. Then obviously when I went off to university, that kind of got put in the back burner for a few years. And then now turning 30-something, I thought I would get back into it then. And I would like to think that I'm a strong swimmer. But it's just practice more than anything else. And as I say, just the love for the outdoors.
So when you first sort of went to the loch to do that, I mean, obviously Scotland's known for the outdoor industry and the outdoor pastimes, cycling and hill walking and so on, and you see people kayaking and sailing on the lochs occasionally when you're nearby. But for the first time stepping out into a loch, did you find there was any sort of anticipation in your mind, any fear of sort of solitude, really, or loneliness?
It was actually in a river that it started. It was in the River Orkney. I've done a lot of kayaking in my time, so because of my poor skills as a kayaker, I've spent quite a lot of time swimming about in the rivers there. And having set up camp on the banks of the Orkney one night, I just decided to go out swimming in the rapids, and I guess the love from outdoor swimming came from there.
Okay, so have you sort of set yourself any ambitions to do all the lochs in Scotland, or is it just sort of something that comes upon you the weekend, you think, I just fancy a quick dip?
Not particularly. My challenge at the moment is to swim the length of Loch Lomond, which is 27 miles. That's the longest loch in Scotland. In hopefully about a year's time, I'll be swimming the length of the Hebrides, going from island to island, potentially walking over the islands and then swimming between the gaps in the land. But I don't have any passion to cover all the lochs that are in Scotland, but as I say, we've got Loch Lomond, Loch Awe and Loch Ness that are the three big ones that I would ideally like to do before, I don't know, before I'm 40 or before I decide that I'll choose another passion.
So do you do this on your own? Is this a sort of a solitary pastime, or have you got a group of friends now, or have the friends developed over time that share it with you?
Funnily enough, none of my friends want to do it.
strange.
But I'll be at the gym, and obviously that's got a pool attached to it, so I'll have a group of friends that I'll see when I'm going there. But when I'm actually out in the lochs or in the rivers, then it's a solitude sport. It's by myself. Although I will have, for example, if I was out in Loch Lomond, you'd have a support boat following you if you were doing anything big.
Well, I'll come on to the Loch Lomond thing in a minute, but certainly, presumably, you just need, a basic wetsuit for this, or is there anything else that's advised that you take with you for something like wild swimming?
You'd need a pair of shorts or a pair of trunks or whatever fits. If the water's cold, then you would always be recommended to wear a swimsuit of sorts. Perfect examples of the Aquasphere suits, neoprene suits, about a millimetre and a half to 2 millimetres thick, a bit of insulation, a bit of buoyancy, and a bit of protection when you're out swimming as well.
Okay. Now, coming to the Loch Lomond swim, 27 miles is an awful long way. I understand you're actually doing it to raise some money. So tell me a bit more about the story.
Well, it was initially just my own personal challenge. Turning 30, I thought I would set myself a challenge, and I chose to do that, swim the length of Loch Lomond. 27 miles should take me between 15 and 18 hours. I've been training now for the best part of 2 years to do it, but through the telling the story to numerous different people on a fairly regular basis, people would say, are you doing it for charity? And initially I wasn't, but I thought I might as well. If I can raise £1, if I can raise £10, if I can raise anything at all for charity, then it's all for the better. One of my friends had a terrible accident where they fell through the hole in the loft, the entrance to the loft, and sadly broke their back. And because of that, because of the care that she had when she was in the hospice, when she was recuperating, I've decided that I'm going to do it for that charity. And as I say, if I raise £10, if I raise £1,000, it will be for a worthy cause.
Excellent. When are you actually planning to do this? You haven't actually sort of mentioned the time of year, and I'm visualising either breaking the ice as you do it or being covered in midges.
4th of September is the day that I've set for it. Yeah. Depending on the way the wind's blowing, we will start in the south end of the loch and work our way up to the north end. But yeah, six weeks from now is the ideal time that I'll be doing it.
Okay, and you're going to power yourself, replenish your energy with gels or bars, or how's that going to work?
It's about keeping hydrated, making sure that you're hydrated, and just energy pouches. I can't really have porridge in the morning. It's going to be a bit more advanced than that. But yeah, as I say, just making sure that you're constantly taking fluids on over the course of the day, because with a swim that length, you'll dehydrate yourself very quickly. You'll also lose a lot of salts through sweating, and your muscles will start cramping up. And the minute that starts happening, then it's pretty much game over. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a fantastic, personal challenge certainly, and obviously a good cause you're raising the money for. If people want to find out more or obviously make a donation, is there any way now that you can tell them to any direction they can go in on the internet?
I'll be setting up over the course of the next week or so, I'll be setting up a page on Facebook that will have all the information and the instructions if you're willing to, or if you're interested, sorry, in donating any money towards the cause.
Presumably, if they can't find that, can they find you through TGO Magazine?
Well, obviously, I'm working for TGO Magazine, you could potentially contact me through that way as well. That's just obviously the information within the magazine or on the website.
There you go, there's a refreshing thing to listen to if you're listening to this podcast in glorious sunshine. Well, thanks to all my guests for contributing to this particular show, and thanks to Roman as well for being our international correspondent here over on the mainland Europe. And we will be back shortly with another series of interviews, I'm sure, from the Friedrichshafen show very soon. I'll be compiling these just as soon as I can when I get back to the UK. So until next time, folks, enjoy the summer, what's left of it, and make the most of these things. Don't forget to get out more and enjoy yourself. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear more from our extensive free library, please visit the website at theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
You can now follow The Outdoor Station on Facebook, where we chat about each programme we produce, answer questions, and discuss future productions. Why not join us there?
This podcast is produced and hosted by theoutdoorstation.co.uk.